We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal Boys and Girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrand. Joining me today, Matt Brown from the Extra Points College Football Newsletter. Dan is still taking some time off. Don't worry. He's fine. He mentioned to me this morning that he thought we secret verbaled him on the last show. He wasn't sure. Of course, I pled ignorance, but he did seem to enjoy it. So good job. Good effort, team. You can call off the dogs now. Look, don't forget to subscribe to the show. If you haven't already, you can go to solidverbal.com. That's the website. Upper right-hand corner, you can find all the links for how to subscribe to the show. We're going twice a week all throughout the off season. At some point, once we get closer to the season, we will switch back up to 3 episodes per week, but a couple months away from that actually being a thing. Look us up on social media, all the hotspots, and check out our Patreon at verballers.com. Today's guest, Matt Brown, longtime friend of the show, never actually a guest on the show. So I wanted to change that because he's doing great work with his Extra Points newsletter. Awesome source of information if you're just interested in how the college football sausage is made. Top quality work, and he's just done some really detailed reporting now that I want to discuss with them in the wake of that EA Sports announcement about the game coming back. So we're going to chat a little bit about that. We'll wade a little bit into the territory about name, image, and likeness, the stuff that we discussed with Andy Staples on Tuesday. And we're also going to talk about some of the quirks of the 2020 season, maybe some of the lessons learned, and what we expect to see as an output of a really weird college football year. Without further ado, let's welcome Matt Brown to the show. All right, joining me now, it is the esteemed author of the Extra Points newsletter, which you can find at extrapointsmb.com. He's also got a new podcast called Going for Two, which he does with our friend Brian Fisher. It's Matt Brown. Welcome to the show. Matt, have we ever had you on the show?
We haven't. I was just thinking about this. How this would have been on my career bucket list, I think, when I started doing this all these years ago, right? It was what Godfrey used to call doing the Tonight Show. If you were a college football blogger, I'm glad to finally make my appearance.
Well, it's great to have you. We've been friends for a long time, all the way back to the days when you were working for SB Nation, and I know doing Ohio State content and other stuff for yeah. for SBN. What is Extra Points?
Sure. So Extra Points is a newsletter that tries to really dig into all the stuff that shapes college athletics that we don't really see on the field. We talk about college sports, and for good reason. We spend a lot of time talking about the sports part and maybe not as much the college side. So this is a newsletter that talks about things like higher education policy and how athletic department finance budgets work and all and how changing student demographic patterns impact the ability for universities to make athletic investments and all of these things that you don't really think about a whole lot. But it really does have a pretty big impact about what schools are actually good at sports. Publishes 4 days a week. I've been doing that now for almost 2 years.
With that being said, we started talking recently about the news that came out. Obviously about the video game, because this is what we do now.
The only important news.
It came out that Notre Dame said they don't want to be part of the game. At least not until the whole NIL legislation gets sorted out. So we did a show on Monday. I talked to Andy Staples about NIL. We got his hot takes on where things are headed in college football with respect to name, image, and likeness. But I wanted to bring Matt on because we both feel like this got a bit misconstrued by what Notre Dame meant. A lot of people took it as Notre Dame doesn't want to be part of the game. They're cutting off their nose to spite their face. I think you and I, if I understand correctly, see things much, much differently, Matt. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that is correct. You know, for one, I think it's premature for anybody to say at this point, at least for an FBS program, that they're not going to be in the game. The game isn't going to come out for two more years. There's a long time to get from A to B. But what Notre Dame said wasn't that they didn't want to be in the football game. It was that they didn't want to participate in the game unless there was a mechanism to directly compensate the players that were going to be in the game. And there's a lot of time for that to happen. And I would imagine that Andy agreed here, but I would be very surprised if when this game eventually comes out, that current athletes' likenesses are not used. There's given how quickly and how dramatically name, image, and likeness legislation is changing. Well, I would feel very confident in the next 18 months that there's going to be a mechanism for that to happen. And so now Notre Dame gets to say they're not really giving anything up by saying that they're not wanting to participate now, but they get to, one, look like a real players program, that they're willing to leave money on the table to advocate for the financial interests of their athletes. And they also get to put a little bit of extra political pressure, because if they can kind of sneak out in the world, we'd like to be a part of this game if X, Y, and Z happens. Well, that makes it much easier for Notre Dame fans to start sending emails and letters asking, well, why isn't X, Y, and Z happening? And if that means that they start putting a little bit of pressure on maybe Indiana's two senators, then all the better here for Notre Dame and all the better for consumers of this video game.
It is sort of a parlor trick to drum up some PR support. And I think to, as you said rightly, make it look like a bit of a players program. I think it's a wise move. I want to harken back, though, to your last point about putting pressure on congressmen. Certainly, video games as a whole have been part of a larger societal conversation for years. That's not anything new. I can't think of any, though, that have cracked the sports realm like this one. Like, you've got members of Congress openly talking about legislation specifically to get the video game back up and running. It seems like we've entered new territory with this thing where the game maybe kickstarted the whole debate. The demise of the game pissed off enough people that they wanted it back and started talking about this. And now we're almost at the point where the game is the vehicle by which we're going to usher in this new era of NIL and perhaps video gaming at large.
It's so funny. I think you're absolutely right. And I think there's this huge gap in understanding between the individuals that are really making these decisions and the consumers. Like, you know, even among my audience, and a lot of my readers are, you know, athletic directors and conference commissioners and people who work in this industry, along with regular fans. The demand when I write about name, image, and likeness, which I've done often, the number one bit of feedback I get from any fan is, how does this impact the video game? Or, great, you know, you can talk to me about the FTC and we can get in the weeds about all this antitrust stuff, but just tell me what it means for the video game. And it's interesting. I feel like some Senate staffers erred and not letting their bosses know, like, listen, if you come out in favor of a group license mechanism, there's not a single voter that's going to punish you. There's not a single conservative voter that's going to think, if we have a group license that's giving too much to athletes, I'm going to vote for another person. But it's the easiest layup in the world, because if you are like 23 to 40. This college video game was a transformational experience in your college football fandom. This is what connected you to the to all these different schools. It's what made you fall in love with your PlayStation. And there's an enormous rush to bring that back. I think it would be the biggest layup. And it, it is funny. Sometimes really significant political changes happen for maybe more superficial reasons. And it, it's entirely possible that we'll look back and realize that what really got the engine going and some of these really big changes in how we define amateurism is in large part because people want to bring Dynasty Mode back.
It's crazy. It is crazy. Who doesn't want Dynasty Mode back? It's just been cool to see, the, of all things, the video game kind of driving the ship here. I feel like I've buried a little bit of the lead because when we exchanged emails and texts earlier, you mentioned the, quote, gazillion FOIA requests that you had been a part of. We have to talk about the FOIA requests. I feel like I feel like when I go through and produce this show, we're going to have to put FOIA requests somewhere in the title or at least in the body, the description of the episode, because people care about that stuff. And you did send out a gazillion of them. Why did you send out a gazillion of them? What are you trying to accomplish?
Sure. So I love the Freedom of Information Act, and I love all of the various versions of that that apply to every other state, because this is a great way to find out information when a school doesn't necessarily want to tell you, right? This is the tool that we use so we can look up coaching contracts and we can figure out what their buyouts are going to be. And you can get an idea for what, you know, boosters and other third parties are telling athletic directors or coaches in a way that you can't necessarily tease that out from a press conference, especially over the last year when we haven't had a chance to do as many press conferences or have that same level of access. So this has been a pretty consistent reporting tool for me when I run Extra Points. And as soon as that video game came out, I was really curious, the announcement of the new video game coming back, I was curious, well, you know, in the initial story with ESPN, the EA Sports mentioned that they have over 100 teams signed up. Well, that's not 130. So clearly there's some there's some schools here that are aware of this video game and didn't immediately sign up. And there's a lot of other schools that would like to be in this video game and weren't mentioned in this press release. You know, if you go back, I think it was like 2007 or so, there were FCS teams in the game. You know, I don't think all of them. I don't think the Patriot League was in it, but there were a lot of other FCS, you know, institutions, and you can still find people who are still playing like the original PlayStation 2 so they can keep playing as like Morgan State or Portland State or something, right? So I filed an open records request for about 160 FBS and FCS institutions.
How long did that take?
You know, normally, if you'd asked me like 2 years ago, like it would have taken me a week. But I've built a gigantic spreadsheet, and my old business partner, Daniel Libet, helped me with this. He's over at Sportico now, that has the correct records keeper for every single FBS institution. So I could now BCC them and send out wow. really big batches relatively quickly. You know, it probably still took me a couple of hours because a lot of schools have individual forms you have to fill out. But I got every public school that I'm allowed to FOIA. For FBS and FCS, try to understand who's in the game. And if they're not in the game, are they communicating why they're not in the game and what some of those communications are like? And, you know, already I found out I got something back from Murray State, which sent me a communication from the CLC, which is the licensing organization that works with most colleges, not everybody, that said, hey, as of right now, I know a lot of people are asking about it. We're not planning on including FCS programs at launch. We might include them later on. So, you know, given that this is EA, don't be surprised if there's a DLC package a couple of months after launch so you could play with your HBCUs and your Patriot League and your Missouri Valley teams. And then I also found communications from some other institutions that either expressed reservations or did not immediately jump on board, like Notre Dame. So I honestly would not be surprised if in the next week or two, we saw an institution give a similar statement to the press that Notre Dame did, saying that we're not going to participate unless X, Y, or Z happen. Some of those are going to be really big names like Notre Dame. Some of them might not be, because I've seen documents to suggest that there are some Mountain West and Conference USA teams that are not, excuse me, not Conference USA, American Athletic Association teams that are not immediately on board.
You mentioned before 2 years. For the game. Where does that 2 years number come from?
Well, it's come from a couple of places. One, this is the timeline that the CLC itself is telling member institutions, right? That they're those this licensing organization. I have the actual email that I've written about here at Extra Point saying, look, we know that some fans are going to expect that we're just going to reskin the NCAA 2014 game and rush this thing out in a couple of months. But that was multiple console cycles ago. Like the code isn't just a copy and paste job. That development team has been, they're not with the company anymore, or they've been moved on to other projects. We want to do this right. And that's going to require some substantial changes. So I want to say the exact language in the CLC email was, it may take several years for this to come out. And even EA Sports, right after that teaser, was saying like, this, you know, this it's going to take a little while. So my expectation is that you'll probably see some kind of teaser or some additional information about this game, maybe in next year's major consumer electronics expos. But I would not expect to be able to sit down with my PlayStation and play it probably until 2023.
And, you know, we've talked about it on the show. For a while, they definitely got in that cycle where they were kind of remaking the older version of the game. The difference between 2013 and 2014, let's say, wasn't that drastic. A couple tweaks here and there, they made it better, but ultimately it was kind of the same deal. But you're right, like we have now pretty much skipped an entire generation of consoles. There was never a version made for the PS4. And with the PS5 now being more and more available, you would assume that they're going to have to do a complete step change in order to make the thing better. What I'm curious to see, and I tend to agree with you that we're going to see players in the game, but a lot has changed on the EA side over the course of time, where the model is geared a lot more towards microtransactions. What does that mean? You can buy stuff in the game. And they've done that really well with Madden. They've done that really well with FIFA. I think there was an old Ultimate Team mode. I know it was there in the 2014 version of the game, where they could probably use that in the newer version and they could steer more into that microtransaction thing to make money. Because let's face it, when this game drops, there's going to be a gazillion people that want to buy it. It's going to be one of their top selling titles almost instantly. So I guess I'm just curious the balance between what does it mean for them to have current players in the game versus what does it mean to just have a game where people can go in there, play it again for the first time in a eternity and start buying stuff and making them money?
It's such a weird dynamic because I feel like the college football game had a really different experience if you're playing it on a one-player mode. You know, I think we've taken this for granted because it's been so many years since we've had this game, but online gaming for consoles wasn't nearly as mature of an industry back in 2013, 2014.
Oh my God, not even close.
As is now. No, like I remember when I had the Xbox 360, I had to buy like an external USB dongle to play online. And a lot of games didn't play online at all. Like what made the NCAA football franchise so attractive and so mesmerizing, for me, and I think for you, and I think for most people, was the dynasty mode. It was this idea to go pick, take Middle Tennessee State or take Akron or take some imported team that we made up and guide them from essentially a Division II program to a powerhouse. And that's a more solo experience. Now, I think you can customize that experience with microtransactions. Like, I mean, they obviously can't do this because they need to have some school licenses, but you can imagine a world where it's like, well, I'm trying to recruit this player, spend $5.99 to drop a bag and make it more likely to bring that player on, right?
Right, right.
Well, when you see it in microtransactions, I think with both EA and with 2K, I play NBA 2K a lot, is that you use those microtransactions to skip ahead in that grinding process. So if you're doing like a solo player campaign like they used to have for EA Sports, maybe you, or for college football, maybe you can drop a little bit of money to automate some of those practice sessions or to boost your character's attributes a little bit. Or I don't even really know if we're going to have an Ultimate Team mode in the same way you have for the other EA Sports games, or even if it does exist, if it would be as popular. I do think it's a pretty safe assumption, though, that EA is going to try and find ways for you to spend money beyond the $70 that it's going to cost to actually get the game.
Yeah, well, Dan and I talked about this before. they could somehow merge the Ultimate Team with the Dynasty Mode. Because you're right, the Dynasty Mode, that was like a seminal moment for a lot of us when that became a thing. Certainly throughout college for me, I mean, that was what we did when we weren't, you know, out and about the town. So it strikes me as something that's important. And I think if they're going to try and retain the luster of the game, they need to make sure that they incorporate that. But again, you know, the bigger question remains the players in the game. Are they actually going to have real likenesses? Are they not? I feel like that's a huge selling point for a lot of people, though. I do think if they put a game out tomorrow and they didn't have that, people would still play it just to kind of get back in the swing of things. I guess the biggest barrier to entry then is that licensing component that you mentioned earlier. And there are bills in Congress now. Some have group licensing, some don't. What do you see as the eventual future state that gets this deal done? How do they structure it for something like college football, which is not like the NFLPA, where you've got a players association that bargains on behalf of the players, at least not yet? How does this eventually happen when it happens?
It's a really good question. And I've talked to a couple of antitrust experts who have suggested that, you know, maybe you really can't do this without a union. And that is the reason why NCAA administrators and school administrators right now have been so reticent to embrace group licensing. Because what name, image, and likeness, the idea of an athlete making a couple hundred bucks for an autograph session or from selling some Instagram ads, that really doesn't bother most athletic directors. Some coaches might complain about it because coaches complain about literally everything. But that alone is not an existential threat. But the idea that that might open the door for codifying an employee-employer relationship, that's the existential threat. And you know, I believe a couple months ago when they were first talking about this, Big East Commissioner Val Ackerman was saying, like, this is why we don't think we can do group licensing. The entity that can force them to do it is Congress. And I mean, there was actually another name, image, likeness bill introduced today from a senator from Kansas that was much more expansive than what had been proposed 6 months ago. What I imagine that's going to happen is we're going to see a federal sweeping college athletics reform bill that's going to be signed probably in Q3 or Q4 of this year. And it's going to produce some kind of national standard for name, image, and likeness legislation. So you won't have 36 different states doing things. It's not going to make athletes employees. And there's going to be a group licensing component. And then the event, everyone's going to haggle over what kind of medical obligations our school is going to have. What is this going to mean for transfer rules? What is this going to mean for antitrust exemption? I suspect that eventually the NCAA will concede to allowing a group license mechanism, whether that's through the NFLPA, whether that's through the college athletes, the organization that that had been organizing athletes to protest before the beginning of the season, whether that's another entity. I think that's going to be an easy thing to say yes to maybe take some of the more scary things to the NCAA off the board. And that's probably where we're headed.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
You mentioned the NCAA, and I know you've reached out to athletic directors and folks within the business of college football, but have you had a chance to get anyone from the NCAA to comment on this, either put their name to it or on background? Like, how do they feel about this asteroid that's headed towards college football?
Well, I mean, specifically about the video game, the number one bit of feedback I've gotten is, I cannot believe so many people care so much about this, which, you know, speaks to this generational divide, right? Where I think if you're over 55, it just does not compute. And now I think those individuals are getting some education here right now. I've talked to a lot of administrators from smaller conferences and smaller schools that say, like, honestly, I'm tired of talking about this. Like, let's just allow it. It's really not going to be a big deal for most of our athletes. And all the time and meetings that we spend haggling over something that's going to impact a couple of kids at Clemson and Ohio State is time that we're taking away from, you know, supporting our academic mission or helping our people graduate or, you know, figuring out how we're going to keep Olympic sports. I think if you talk to some administrators at FCS leagues or even some G5 leagues, that's what the feedback that you're going to get. But you have a couple of leaders at some really big schools that are still kind of really hardliners against any kind of name, image, or likeness. And if there's one thing that I think scares everybody in the Power Five, it's this idea of schools getting recruiting advantages. And, like, it doesn't really make sense to me because I know, and you know, and God knows, and Mark Emmert knows that this is not a completely fair recruiting playing field anyway. Ohio State and Alabama and Notre Dame are going to have advantages over Oregon State forever. They've had that for 100 years. But that is what is keeping these administrators up at night, is this idea that somehow if you codify the ability for a recruit to make a little bit of money, then that will throw everything into disarray. And I don't think the data supports that, but that's definitely the concern.
It just seems like with the amount of revenue schools are able to generate off of these kids that they should get a little bit something in return. I know they get scholarships in a lot of cases, but I think the value for what they provide far exceeds that in many cases. So if we are trying to build a case for this beyond the moral argument that they should get something for it, what is the data?
Well, I look at it this way. So let's say that I'm wrong. And the worst case scenario is correct, and that if we allow a name, image, and likeness marketplace, that the largest, best financed institutions will have an even stronger recruiting advantage over the others. And to that, I'd say, look at the recruiting rankings now. You're only allowed to sign 25 kids, and Alabama's signing 24 blue chippers. Like, you've had the same six schools monopolizing the talent acquisition since we've really been measuring it in earnest. So let's say, okay, name, image, and likeness gives Alabama an advantage. How much better can that recruiting class realistically get? Like, one school's not going to sign literally the top 25 recruits. You know, four of them are going to be quarterbacks. I don't know if there's really a meaningful way for, like, the top six schools to separate themselves even more from a parity perspective. So that means, okay, it's either worst case going to stay the same, or it might get better. And this is what I've heard from economists, is that if you are a program in a more rural market that has a really defined fan base, you're in a position now to literally make a better financial pitch. I could definitely see a world where somebody could make more money playing at Nebraska or at Mississippi State or even East Carolina than they might at a more prestigious institution, because they have a market that's more willing to let them have other commercial opportunities. I feel like a lot of the detractors are kind of talking at both sides of their mouth when this will ruin competitive balance, which has never existed, or only three people are going to take advantage of this. And while, like, I don't really think there's going to be a ton of football players that are going to be making six figures, coming back to the video game, if there's a group license, literally every single football player in FBS will get some money from participating in this game. That means your name, image, or likeness value is greater than zero. Like, that payoff might be $100 on a copy of the game, but it's not nothing.
Well, and a lot of kids would take that. A lot of kids would be fine with that.
Unquestionably. I think I've never talked to an athlete that said, you know, I'm glad the game went away. this was something, you know, they grew up playing it too. They want to be able to say that they were in the game. I don't think, I'd be very surprised if in the near future somebody says, you know, I'm going to hold out for more money. I really want $6,000. The individual amount of money really probably isn't going to be very much. The schools themselves don't get paid very much for the license. Like Notre Dame's not getting a $300,000 check for being in this football game.
Yeah. And hey, I mean, look, in this brave new world, EA could use some of these players to endorse the game.
Unquestionably. Or, you know, they could use some of these players not just to do commercials for the game, but to help promote the game as an esports product and to tie that into, you know, licensed, sponsored, organized collegiate esports, which is which blowing up all over the country. And part of the reason why it hasn't been a very good commercial television product is, you know, a lot of those games that are really popular now are inaccessible. But we know you can put college football on TV, and we know people understand it. Some of these athletes themselves might want to do it. There's so many commercial opportunities tied to this particular product that are out there. It just involves, you know, some administrators being willing to take the risk or give up a little bit to make it happen.
Matt, let me shift gears a little bit. We've been talking a lot about the game, NIL, your crazy FOIA requests, which is just madness, if you ask me. I love it. What did we learn from the 2020 season? What do you think will be the ultimate output from this grand experiment that we just walked through? Because we had all sorts of stuff that I would imagine was pretty high up on your radar, right? We had the influence of TV money in making a season happen. We had the influence of, frankly, being in a conference versus not being in a conference for a school like Notre Dame. We had the opt-outs. What is your takeaway?
That's a great question. I've been thinking about this a lot because, you know, normally during this time of year, we're considering off-season planning. We're thinking about next year. And we feel like we have a data set that we just watched where you would feel comfortable making extrapolations about what next season might look like. And you know, one big takeaway for me is that I think a lot of the data that we saw doesn't make any sense at all. And it was honestly surprising to me to see schools still pay out enormous buyouts to let their coaches go, in large part based off that data.
Yeah,
where
yeah.
Very few Power Five teams play with a completely full roster for extended weeks. Games got canceled and postponed all of the time. Nobody had any kind of practice continuity. Like my impulse is honestly is to throw out most of that data at all. But a lot of schools didn't. And that's, I honestly, I think an important takeaway. Because if the coaching salary and buyout and that marketplace couldn't be reset after last year, where so many of these athletic departments are facing such a significant financial crunch, and there's all of these great, I mean, great, like in terms of substantial, you know, reasons to take it slow. If schools are still willing to pay that money, I don't think anything's going to slow that down, short of like federal law, in an antitrust exemption that limits salaries. The business of college football doesn't really stop for anybody. It didn't stop for athletes. I know we had some in the beginning of the season where athletes tried to organize and bargain for changes in what they're given as far as medical rights. You know, athletes in the Pac-12 tried to bargain for, you know, revenue shares, and mostly they got steamrolled. And I think we've seen that athletes can wield political and social pressure on campus. But when they try to, or at least have tried to kind of integrate across teams or as a conference and push for change that way, when they arguably had some real leverage this year, it didn't happen, which makes me honestly think more skeptical that that's going to happen again in the near future, even though there's other commentators that seem to be more bullish about it. We're going to see some changes, you know, kind of in terms of how teams schedule and what they spend money on. And those are going to last for, you know, more and more. But I think we're going to look at this the way we do look at football seasons back in like 1942. And you look at the record books and you just think, well, clearly none of this makes sense. We know Alabama was good. We know Notre Dame was good during the World War II years. We know Army was good. And we just have to, you know, throw the records out because all the other data basically doesn't make any sense to me.
Do you have any thoughts on what we saw with Notre Dame at a conference? Because obviously that was a pretty big storyline for me, for Notre Dame fans, for college football as a whole. It made sense for Notre Dame to jump ship from the independence that it enjoys and join the ACC on a one-time only basis. I would have to believe at some point in time, Notre Dame will again be forced to make that decision to either reaffirm its independence or join a conference. Do we have any data, any thoughts around the economics of that and whether or not it will make sense maybe 5 years in the future versus what we see presently?
You know, I do feel pretty confident that this is going to be a reoccurring storyline this summer, even if Notre Dame fans really don't want it to be. And the major reason for that is that right now, if Notre Dame joins any conference, as of right now, they are contractually obligated to join the ACC. And the ACC, unlike the other major leagues right now, is locked into their tier one television deal for the foreseeable future. The Big Ten is going to go to market, I think, next year. The Pac-12 and the Big 12 have new deals coming up. The SEC just signed theirs. The ACC is locked up with ESPN for another decade. And they're going to get lapped revenue-wise by probably everybody else by the end of the decade. And the only way that they're going to be able to get ESPN to renegotiate is if they meaningfully change their conference membership. And the big fish, obviously, is going to be Notre Dame. And their new commissioner, Jim Phillips, is a Chicago guy. He was at Notre Dame before he was at Northwestern. I would be shocked if that scenario did not come up during his interview process. And that's going to be a storyline because especially as we get a better idea of how much more money the Big Ten and maybe some of these other leagues will potentially be able to get in their TV deal and lap the ACC. I don't know if necessarily Notre Dame is going to be forced into it. The only way I can think of where that might happen would be if for some weird reason the college football playoff changed their selection criteria and locked independence out. You know, Notre Dame is the only school that has the flexibility and the other revenue streams where I think they can still dictate terms a little bit. And I think we both recognize that there are some forces here outside of just pure money that are in play because, you know, there's a whole lot of older Notre Dame grads and donors and people connected to that university that come hell or high water don't want them to join a league, even if maybe that isn't so important to the school's identity for people around our age. I'd be a little bit surprised if it happened. I think it made sense for this year, gave us some good football games. It was good for Notre Dame's schedule. It made sense for COVID. I'm sure we're going to keep talking about it. I'd be surprised if it happens in the immediate future.
Yeah, I don't see it happening. Everyone that I've spoken with seems pretty adamant about independence woven into the fiber of Notre Dame. I've said this time and again on this show, I would be very surprised. I've always been in favor of it, but also 2020 was such a quirky season. I keep using this word quirky, but it's true. I think Jack Swarbrick had the right idea. He knew that in order to carry on, have a competitive season, maybe have a chance for a national championship or even a playoff berth, they were going to have to do something drastic. And that move was to join the ACC to become team number 15. So it made sense in context to do it during COVID. I'm just curious to see what eventually comes of it, because you're right. Having Notre Dame in the conference for 1 year was an interesting test case. It certainly had more eyes on the ACC, a conference which right now is very lopsided at the top with Clemson. There aren't a whole lot of contenders outside of Clemson in the ACC. So to bring Notre Dame in there, it was an infusion of attention, an infusion of eyeballs that care about the conference. And now to bring over a Chicago guy, somebody who knows Notre Dame, I know it's been written about and talked about an awful lot online, but it makes sense to me that he's got Notre Dame and Jack Swarbrick on speed dial, trying to see what kind of agreement they can come up with. Because, you know, the ultimate question here, outside of the whole image and the identity that Notre Dame has formed around independence, eventually someone's going to put an offer on the table that's too good to pass up. What does that offer look like is my question. What is it going to take? Because everyone's got a price. What is it going to take to change Notre Dame's mind in a way that it's too good to pass up?
It would take a lot of money. And, honestly, I wouldn't be shocked if heading into this decade, if rather than the ACC coming up there and we're working with ESPN and throwing a gigantic money pot, I wouldn't be shocked if, on the other hand, NBC starts thinking, we have this good thing going here with Notre Dame. And I wonder if we could get USC to do something similar. If USC is frustrated with the direction of their programming, and if NBC thinks like, look, what if we got two or three teams that are all major brands and we can control their entire television inventory? Maybe we can try to do this entire thing somewhere else. I almost think that might be more likely than Notre Dame jumping into the league. We'd be looking at Notre Dame would have to pull in $55-60 million at least, I think, per school distribution to make a jump into the ACC. And it's hard for me to see that immediately happening. But who knows who decides to enter the television world later this decade or what other membership changes the league might potentially make.
Well, I know that the likes of Google, Facebook, those types of platforms were bidding on Pac-12 rights, and you would assume that they could afford to pay more than almost any network. So, especially now as streaming has become much more of a mainstay, that some of those other platforms might have a stake in the game here. The question is, does that make sense for conferences? Does that give them the visibility that they want? If you're the Pac-12, visibility is not something you've been very good at. And so maybe it's worth thinking outside the box to try and figure out, all right, how can we get this product that we have in front of as many people as possible? Maybe it takes a platform like a Google to help you do that. But if you're a more traditional conference that, is on in the Eastern time zone and is more marketable in the Midwest, like the Big Ten, maybe it doesn't make sense. So I don't know. I just think we're at a really interesting place right now, not just with Notre Dame, but with how people consume media, how people watch football.
Yeah.
Fewer people have cable now than ever before. The dynamics have just changed so drastically.
It's interesting when you frame it that way. My understanding is that one of the reasons that talks between Apple TV or some of these other fan companies in the Pac-12 didn't progress more was for exactly that concern about exposure. Because, a lot of people stream, but there are still a lot more people that have cable television or access to linear cable television than have Apple TV, no matter how good of a show Ted Lasso is.
Yeah.
And that is a factor for coaches and for kids, because they want to be, you want to be able to say, Meemaw can watch you, Grandma can watch you on TV without having to futz around with three other apps. It's why coaches are terrified to not be on ESPN, even if someone else is going to pay them more money, because they want to be able to say that they have that same access. But we're already seeing right now colleges, be willing to step outside of the traditional framework in the hopes of maximizing revenue. The Colonial Athletic Association, which is a pretty good FCS football league, if not, it's probably one of the top three. They have they signed an agreement with Flow Sports, and it's all streaming outside of local cable. And Flow pays them a rights fee far and above what they would have been able to get had they re-upped with CBS or ESPN Plus. Now, Flow's not cheap, and a lot of their fans aren't crazy about it. But that moves to a platform that was able to maximize their revenue. And so that's going to be a question for Notre Dame and for the Pac-12 and for the Sun Belt and for everybody else. Do you go with what gives you the most exposure? Do you go with what gives you the most revenue? Do you want to bet on what you think will give you the most exposure? Will still give you the most exposure in a couple of years?
That's it.
And because this has such an outsized role in budgets, it's an enormously important question for college athletics, because for the Power Five teams, you're making more money from your television, your conference distribution, than you're making from donations, than you're making from ticket sales. Like you have to get this right.
If you were the Pac-12 and you had an offer on the table at this point, now they may have had one in the past, but at this point in time, if Google comes to you and they say, we will pay you far and away more than any other suitor, we will put all of your games available on YouTube, we'll do it via apps, we'll make it as omnipresent as possible, it's a compelling case. It's a compelling case knowing the era of Pac-12 football that you just left behind, where despite all of Larry Scott's efforts, whatever they were, it didn't really work to raise the profile of the conference. So I think the time is right for them to think outside the box and maybe do something that wouldn't necessarily be the cookie cutter way to go about it. But I am clearly not in charge of that conference. and why would they listen to me?
You know, and listen, if we were, we would both have much nicer home offices than we've got right now, I bet.
For sure. For sure. All right. Well, his name is Matt Brown. He has so graciously given us a lot of his time. Let's talk real quick again about the newsletter, extrapointsmb.com. Going for Two is the new podcast. You can follow Matt at Matt Brown EP on Twitter. What is on the radar over on the Extra Points newsletter? What is it that you're working on now?
Yeah, I have a couple of stories that I'm working on right now. One thing I've been fascinated with, and I'm trying to get more information about, is to really dig into explaining how college athletic systems are different in different countries. We have Canadian college football. We have Japanese college football. My family is from Brazil, and American football has been growing there, and some universities have kicked around starting programs. But if you're starting it now, you don't have 150 years of amateurism baggage, or you wouldn't do things the same way that we do. So I've sent out a bunch of interview requests, and I've got through some books, and that's something I'm hoping to dig into, I think, over the next couple of months. I have a couple of other stories coming up with some academics who have been doing some research about college athletics and the sort of things that help, you know, promote athletic achievement and student achievement. And, you know, if you're just curious about what goes on off the field and want to really understand the nuts and bolts that shape this business, because it is a business, then I think you would enjoy Extra Points.
Well, that's cool, because we've got a lot of folks who listen overseas. So here's hoping that maybe they find a new home over at Extra Points MB.
That sounds great. I've been joking. As soon as I get this vaccine, my sister lives in São Paulo, and I'm gonna go visit her, and I want to go start bugging as many people as we can to learn more about what's going on with American football down there. And if nothing else, I'll get to do it with some better weather than we got here.
All right. Matt Brown, again, Extra Points is the newsletter. Going for Two is the podcast. Come back anytime, man. This is fun. Good to catch up.
Yeah, it's always good to chat with you. Next time we'll talk about woodworking or something.
Sounds good.
A little bit less, a different kind of nerdy, right?
Something I know even less about, for sure.
We're gonna get you into power tools one way or another. It's going to be great.
All right. Again, big thanks to our guest of honor, Matt Brown from the Extra Points newsletter. Don't forget, we will be back next week. Two more episodes coming your way on Tuesday and Thursday. In the meantime, for myself, Ty Hildebrand, for Dan Rubenstein, wherever he may be, thank you so much for downloading, for listening, for supporting the show. Stay healthy, stay happy, stay solid.